Multiple organizations and groups in Tunisia are trying to create a healthy discussion around sexuality and gender. Mojoudin, Demsh, Chouf, Falghatna, as well as many Tunisian activists and human rights defenders are fighting for the rights of the LGBTQ community that is still being discriminated against, not only by an archaic penal law, but also vague morality legislations, in addition to social stigma and intolerance. We had the honor to speak to non-binary queer activist Rima Yahyawi Askri to get an idea about queer rights in Tunisia, how far the fight has come, and what is being done to protect members of the LGBTQ community. Welcome to the Activism Academy. We have been joined by Rima Yahyawi Askri, a non-binary queer activist from Tunisia. Hello, Rima. Would you like to introduce yourself and your work?
Hello, my name is Rima, and like you said, I'm a non-binary queer activist from Tunisia. Currently, I work with the initiative Mojoudin for Equality, which is an organization that's in Tunisia working on the rights of minorities, especially for the queer community. I am the coordinator, the general coordinator of Mojoudin Queer Femme Festival in its third edition, which unfortunately keeps getting postponed because of COVID and everything that's happening around us in the world. And I also work as the project officer for the Azilium Project, which is a project for immigrants and Azilium seekers and migrants from the queer community here in Tunisia. Also, I also do volunteer work, and I volunteer with African Queer Youth Initiative. I've been with them since 2017, and it is mainly a network for queer activists from all around Africa.
It's really great to have you. Thank you. So let's start by giving our listeners some context. In 2020, there were 12 prison sentences handed down against gay men and trans people for offenses under different sections of the penal code in Tunisia. How is the legal framework for LGBTQ in Tunisia?
Okay, so as we all know, it's illegal to be queer in Tunisia here. Mainly, we have the penal code. There's the law 230 that clearly says that you could be punished up to 3 years of imprisonment if you're homosexual. And then there are two other specific parts of the penal code that are mainly used against trans people, which is 260 and 260 bis, which basically says that if you do anything that goes against our culture and the morals of society, they could use that against you. So basically what they do, they use that against the trans community if they're cross-dressing or if their gender expression is not according to their gender identity or to their sex assigned at birth, to what's written on their identification and all. So they use that against them for imprisonment as well.
How is this situation evolving? Do you see Article 230 being abolished soon?
Honestly, I wouldn't say soon, as in very, very soon, but hopefully in the future. It is taking quite some time. Many organizations in Tunisia are working on this. There's a lot of work that's been happening, but it keeps getting pushed back, and it's taken quite some time. I would say it's gonna happen in the future, but how soon? Not that soon, especially with the political situation in Tunisia, and mainly generally everything being a bit of a mess. I would say it's gonna take some time.
Can you tell us a bit more about the political situation in Tunisia?
Okay, so generally what we have is, I know this is like more of a personal point of view. I would say that a lot of people are fighting to get power, but they're not really focusing on the change or things that should be happening. And honestly, when I see it, it's becoming more of a joke, like how people are fighting. It's like children back in kindergarten fighting over something, but forgetting the bigger picture and forgetting the revolution, forgetting all the sacrifices that people have made, and forgetting all the people that we lost and everything, which is a bit sad. But at the same time, it's it's also promising because we have the younger generations that are rising, the younger generations that, like, especially those that were born during the revolution. So they know that they have the right to speak up, and they are speaking up, and they are trying to make the change and proclaim their rights to make that change happen. So I would say it's a bit sad at the moment, but I'm also very, very optimistic for the future.
I see. And remaining on the political talk, during the last elections in 2019, Munir Batur ran for president, and he was the first openly gay person to do so in Maghreb. Can you tell us more about this, and how did the population and the civil society react?
Okay, so when this news was shared, mainly a lot of people, especially those who are not from Tunisia or who do not really know the Tunisian context, many organizations like reached out, and many people from the media, and they were so happy, and they saw this as the good news for the first openly gay person in the Maghreb to run for president. But I would love to explain that this is not actually a good news, and for the Tunisians who know this person, and for the people who know some facts that are unknown for the rest, we actually run a petition to explain that we should stop sharing this news, and we should stop making him or praising him as a hero or as a person that we should celebrate this news with the rest of the people. So it's actually that this person, he has a lot of allegation for being a pedophile, and he works with an organization that we're also boycotting in Tunisia for many reasons. Some of them to mention could be related to corruption and to outing people and to their methods, I would say, that we do not agree on specifically. So we made a petition, organizations and activists, Tunisian organizations and activists, we made a petition here in Tunisia, and we explained all these reasons, and we signed this petition, of course, and we sent it to as many media as possible, asking them to stop sharing this news, because we don't want this person to get the praise that they were giving them.
I see. So apart from the fact that there was something wrong with this candidate and the allegations against him, do you remember how people reacted to the fact that he was gay? And would there be a chance for a gay or lesbian or anyone from the LGBT community president to run again without being in danger? Or do you still see it in a negative light that it's a taboo and it's going to be a dangerous endeavor?
Okay. First, in Tunisian, for the Tunisian people, there were, like, of course, like, many different reactions. So there was this group, of course, the homophobes and all. They were so angry and so mad, and actually it brought more attention to the queer community. They were like, how can a gay person run for president in an Islamic country, and all those arguments and whatsoever. And then there was a group who did not know the person, who are allies and people from the queer community as well, who see this as a triumph, which is very understandable to see someone queer, like, running for this very, very important position in our country. But then to have in the future maybe a lesbian or a gay person or a queer person in general running openly running for president, I don't think that's really possible, as long as we have the penal code, unless it's a very, very brave person, because to openly say that I'm gay, they will be putting their risk, they will be putting themselves very, very huge risk being pursued by justice and all. I don't know, maybe it in the future we would have a very brave person who would use this as a strategy, possibly, but I would say not before we have these articles changed or eliminated from our laws, honestly.
It makes a lot of sense because those articles are actively putting normal people in danger. We don't even need to talk about celebrities, but normal day citizens like you and people from your community. So zooming out from the president issue and the elections and everything, just looking at normal Tunisian society, do you see that there's a move towards being more in favor of legalizing same-sex unions in the sense that people are more accepting and normalizing the existence of the LGBTQ community in Tunisia? Or do you see it as being still a hurdle and that there's no progress being made? Because I've seen you've been doing a lot of important work with Mojoudine. I see Demj also, all the activists that are actively trying to make the place better for the LGBT community. But it's so hard to zoom out and really have a conclusion. Is this actively helping or are we moving backwards?
I think it is helping, but to a certain degree. So we cannot really talk about same-sex unions in Tunisia. Not yet. I think it's very, very soon. And sometimes we have like people using this arguments against the queer community. So, for example, when you go and talk to someone in the street and you're like, we're talking about the penal code, we want people to exist and not having the risk of going to jail and all, and they'll be like, oh, and afterwards, what would you want? You would want to get married and have children. But I would say with moving forward slowly, which is not, it's not bad. I would say it's at least it is something. But again, like from a personal point of view, I think the younger generations, we have like two sides. We have this very expressive, open generation. And sometimes I even envy them, honestly, when I see them, like at a very young age, they're so open with their sexuality and they're so open expressing themselves and being who they are. And then we have also from the same generation apart that who are very, very extremist, if I could say. And I don't know, it's like, it's gonna be in the future with them for us to see the result of the work that we're doing now. So we cannot really conclude. I'm very optimistic for the future and what's to come again. And I think it would be in the future that we would really see the results, like actual results of the work that is being done now. It doesn't mean that we're not seeing like an impact and results, but then it's going to be the future generation to continue the work and to see if like if this is a sustainable thing or not. I don't know if I want to talk a bit because with Mojoudine, at least for the couple few years, we decided to get away from our bubble and our safe zone a bit, and we started working and talking to allies and possible allies. It was scary at the beginning, and it was not something that we really thought about, because we always have that fear of how their reaction would be and how would be the right method to get them and to reach out to them. But in the same time, we see it very, very important to have allies with us in the fight. So people from the community alone, they have been doing such amazing work, but they cannot like do it on themselves, in the sense that we need more people to join the cause and more people to be with us and for them to help us as well, like spread the word and spread the message and being more tolerant as possible. So again, optimistic for nations and what they're going to do, allies being with us in the cause and more allies understanding what we're doing and like just to support us. Yeah.
Like the Activism Academy, if you have anyone who needs us, if your organization needs any support, you can count on us and on our allies, and we are all in this together. Moving on to a more darker part of the fight, moving away from the hope that you've been expressing, there were reports earlier this year about the police doxing and harassing activists like Rania Amdouni many, many times, with photos circulating on Facebook and really, really harsh harassment. They've also broken into the headquarters of Demj earlier this year. Are they getting away with it, or is there any legal action taken against them?
In a sense, unfortunately, I would say they are getting away with it. And this is not only like for activists and for what happened in Demj, because in Tunisia, we had many, many individuals. Like, for example, we had some cases where a person was robbed, or in some cases where a person was harassed by someone in the street, or even harassed by police officers. And when they go and trying to like put a claim and ask for help from the police, the tables always turned against them. So we had someone who had his phone robbed, and when he went to the police station to ask for help, they checked his phone, they found messages and photos, and they used that against him. We had people who have been harassed, who have been harassed by the police, and when they tried to speak up, they beat him up, and they turned the table against him, and they tried to charge him with the Article 230 being like saying that he is too feminine, which means for them automatically that he is gay, which is very, very bad, because we do not really have any kind of legal protection from the police, and I'm sure you know this. So even if people would charge things against them, I don't personally think it's gonna lead anywhere. They would only use that to harass you back and use that against you. And like it's sad to say this, but it's not safe. Like, people are not safe anymore with the police, and we are not safe anymore with the police. So you can never know what could happen, honestly.
We can also add that this extreme harassment is also forcing LGBTQ activists into exile. They have to move to other countries in order to be safe.
Yeah, which is their right, and which is very understandable. And unfortunately, a lot of people are finding themselves having to leave Tunisia. And again, it's sad, because I'm focusing on the word having to, because it's not much of a choice if you're facing charges in your country, if you're facing all this gender, if you don't even know what could happen in the future. So they found themselves having to leave their country, having to leave their friends and family in the hope of being safe and elsewhere, and having a decent life, if I could say.
Yeah, but we can also add a more positive light, reconnecting to what you were saying earlier about the younger generation that are joining in on the fight and keeping the torch alight, in a sense.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, which is good. It's always good when there is hope still. That hope is not lost.
Yeah.
And you yourself identify as a non-binary. So how is your experience as a non-binary person in Tunisia within the LGBTQ community and also outside of the community?
I've started identifying myself as non-binary in the couple last years. So it was just like 2 years ago that I came out as non-binary, and I didn't even know the word before, because growing up, I always had this conflict of, I don't feel like I'm a girl, I don't feel like I'm a boy, so what is it? I don't want to be a boy, I don't want to be a girl. So what is it exactly? And then we always have that very, very lack of information, especially in Arabic, which is crazy. And even right now, like when I use my pronouns, I always say like my pronouns are they and them, but then in Arabic and the Tunisian language, we don't have they, and even if we have they, it's always like in the feminine or in the masculine way. We don't have like a neutral pronoun to use, and so in Tunisia, I'm finding myself in a sense having to use the masculine pronoun, because I don't like, for now, because the language is always changing, so I don't know, in the future we might create something new, which is a bit limiting, because sometimes when people would call me using the masculine pronoun, so people will confuse that and will be asking questions like, what does that mean? Do you identify as a trans man? I'm like, no, not really. But then it's very, very limiting to explain that in our language, in a sense. Within the LGBT community, we're always happy people, also, at least in the most part of it. So people were, some people from the queer community, they were like, they already know what non-binary means, and they were like so open and it's fine. But then others did not even know the term, and they still don't know. So we're trying to explain it. But then always there's this confusion. If you say that you are non-binary, does that mean that you are trans? Which is the fact that actually non-binarity is also under the umbrella of the trans community. There are some fights and going back and forward about it, but I personally see it as part of the trans community. Outside of the queer community, it is not easy to explain it at all. It's not simple to explain it at all, and it gets people very, very confusing because I don't know, we were raised used to this binarity in everything. So it's like pink and blue. If you try to explain it to some people, they would get so confused. And they would start asking some questions that I sometimes find them very funny, but I try to take them in a very simple sense and reply to those questions, as long as they don't have any, I don't know, any bad intention by asking those questions. But it's kind of to explain it to a society and to people where we were all raised in such a binary world. Like, it's just black and white, and we're not used to something in the middle or outside of the spectrum.
Do you think maybe in the future it will be possible for example, to bring this topic also in school and to have it more accessible for younger people?
In school in Tunisia, I think it would take some time again, because just speaking about gender, we only know women and the men. So that's all we know in Tunisia. And like, the sex assigned at birth, that's your gender. And even people confuse those things too, like those two things, like talking about sex assigned at birth and gender, and then talking about gender identity and gender expression. Even those things, we're like, we do not know them. We were not raised like learning these things, and we've never seen them anywhere. It's like just the basics. So what we're trying to do now is at least to start at the very, very like grassroots levels, and to start explaining what gender is. And it's not as simple, if I'd say, as binary and talking about just a girl and a boy. But I think afterwards it would be, if at least we start with this, afterwards it would be easier to explain and talk about other subjects like non-binarity and the trans community and the intersex community and all.
So you are also part of the African Queer Youth Initiative. It would be great to know more about that, your work with them, the work they do.
So the African Queer Youth Initiative, it's a network. We're trying to get it registered as an organization, hopefully very, very soon. Basically, it is a network of African queer activists from all around Africa, which is something awesome, if I could say, because we have these very, very similarities in our history and in our realities and our lives, but then we're not working together as much as we would want to, as we would hope to. So basically, we provide some trainings, but some trainings, and as well we help each other, in a sense that if there is a case, for example, in a country, they will reach out to in our chat group and our discussion. We'll be talking about ways, for example, if that thing happened in our country, these are the possibility of things that we could do, and these are the things that you could do, and these are the do's and don'ts, if I could say. And then we're always on a continuous communication, in the sense that we're trying to always keep reaching out to each other and helping each other in every way. So for example, for me, working on the Asylum project in Tunisia, we have a lot of Asylum seekers that comes to Tunisia from all around Africa. So sometimes I'll reach out to activists that I know in that specific country and ask about the laws, or if there are organizations in that country that could support, or if they know this person, they know something. So it makes things very, very easy. If I could say, it makes things easier, and it gives us this sense of if community, of a sense of togetherness as well, which is cool, which is really nice to have that once in a while.
When I first heard that you were working with them, I was really fascinated, because I just love the fact that there is this African youth initiative. It doesn't always have to be something imported from somewhere else, because people love to say that, oh, you imported this and this and that from there and there. No, we're actually Africans, and we're working together to create a better world.
Yeah, it is part of our culture, either people want that or not, people agree that or not.
Exactly.
But about the queer community and the queer culture, there is like a huge African queer culture, but unfortunately it was the colonialism that that in a sense they helped in, or they caused the disappearance of that culture. And there are a lot of people from all around Africa working on making the needed research and working on reviving that queer culture and working on finding it, which is sad talking about finding, because it exists, but there's a lot of research being done to bring that culture and say, hey, it's here. It's a part of our history. It's a part of who we are. And it was never something that was important from other countries, from the north of the world. It's actually part of us, and it has existed for many, many years, that it was this colonial thing that caused the disappearance and that wanted to erase this part, this amazing part of our culture.
Yeah, and speaking about culture and to know more about the topic, would you like to recommend to our listeners a book and a film to get more deeply into the topic?
A book and a film about the Tunisian queer culture?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to think like very, very quickly right now. There is a book, but it's mostly not about the culture in a sense, but about the panel called 230. That's very important, and because it talks about this panel called and how it is actually not a thing that Tunisian put in place, and it was put in place from the French colony who came to Tunisia. So, and the history of this article and the fact that there are no, in a sense, it's not something legal, like very shortly. The title is just Article 230, and it was written by a Tunisian activist. And I would recommend people to read it to better understand the history and how it was put in place and everything, and all the research that was done are related to it. But a movie, I'm trying to think about Tunisian movie that talks about our culture.
It could also be something linked to other parts of the fight, since the fight is intersectional, like feminism in general or police brutality. There are a lot of good movies, so I'm like really excited to know which one you are going to pick.
So talking about films, I would recommend the documentary, a film that was done in Tunisia. It's called Upon the Shadow. It was done with activists and people from the queer community, all Tunisian. So it's a nice movie, and would recommend it to people to watch it.
So thank you, Vima, for joining us today. It has been really a great learning experience to hear what is happening in Tunisia. And of course, we hope that you will find more and more allies supporting your cause. And we hope the government and the society will change soon and be more inclusive and ready to support every single one of its citizens. And of course, we remain open to express all our support to you, and feel free to reach us out to us and to all our allies if you need support, extra support on your fight.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a nice, a very nice talk. I loved it.
Thank you for sticking with us until the end. We hope you enjoyed the discussion, and we would love to receive your feedback and comments through our social media. Apropos social media, our next episode is going to feature Norwegian mental health advocate and model Agatha Borgesen, who is advocating for body positivity online and is trying to remove the taboo around scars and self-harm. Tune in!